Chapter 23. His own works, without trusting to the tedious and expensive assistance of the engraver, and the best friend to the people likewise, who have means of purchasing these cheap and beautiful productions, and thus having their ideas olified, and their manners heroes no more. With ourselves, among whom money is plenty, enterprise so great, and everything matter of commercial speculation, lithography has not been so much practiced as wood or steel engraving, which, by the aid of great original capital and spread of sale, are able more than to compete with the art of drawing on stone. The two former may be called art done by machinery. We confess to a prejudice in favor of the honest work of hand, in matters of art, and prefer the rough workmanship of the painter to the smooth copies of his performances which are produced, for the most part, on the woodblock or the steel plate. The theory will possibly be objected to by many of our readers. The best proof in its favor, we think, is that the state of art amongst the people in France and Germany, where publishers are not so wealthy or enterprising as with us, asterisk and where lithography is more practiced, is infinitely higher than in England, and the appreciation more correct. As draftsmen, the French and German painters are incomparably superior to our own. And with art, as with any other commodity, the demand will be found pretty equal to the supply. With us, the general demand is for neatness, prettiness, and what is called effect in pictures, and these can be rendered completely, nay, improved, by the engraver's conventional manner of copying the artist's performances. But to copy fine expression and fine drawing, the engraver himself must be a fine artist. And let anybody examine the host of picture books which appear every Christmas, and say whether, for the most part, painters or engravers possess any artistic merit. We boast, nevertheless, of some of the best engravers and painters in Europe. Here, again, the supply is accounted for by the demand. Our highest class is richer than any other aristocracy, quite as well instructed, and can judge, and pay for fine pictures and engravings. But these costly productions are for the few, and not for the many, who have not yet certainly arrived at properly appreciating fine art. Asterisk these countries are, to be sure, inundated with the productions of our market, in the shape of Byron beauties, reprints from the keepsakes, books of beauty, and such trash. But these are only of late years, and their original schools of art are still flourishing. Take the standard album, for instance, that unfortunate collection of deformed Zuleikas and Medoras from the Iran beauties, the flowers, gems, souvenirs, caskets of loveliness, beauty, as they may be called, glaring caricatures of flowers, singly, in groups, in flower pots, or with hideous deformed little cupids sporting among them. Of what are called as a tinto, pencil drawings, puna paintings, and what not. The album is to be found invariably upon the round rosewood brass in the drawing room table of the middle classes, and with a couple of newels besides, which flank it on the same table, represents the art of the house. Perhaps there is a portrait of the master of the house in the dining room, grim glancing from above the mantelpiece, and of the mistress over the piano upstairs. Add to these some odious miniatures of the sons and daughters, on each side of the chimney glass. And here, commonly we appeal to the reader, if this is an overcharged picture, the collection ends. The family goes to the exhibition once a year, to the National Gallery once in 10 years. To the former place they have an inducement to go. There are their own portraits, or the portraits of their friends, or the portraits of public characters, and you will see them infallibly wandering over No. 2645 in the catalogue, representing the portrait of a lady, or of the Erstmayor of Little Pedlington since the passing of the Reform Bill, or else bustling and squeezing among the miniatures, where lies the chief attraction of the gallery. England has produced, owing to the effects of this class of admirers of art, 2 admirable, and 500 very clever, portrait painters. How many artists? Let the reader count upon his five fingers, and see if, living at the present moment, he can name one for each. If, from this examination of our own worthy middle classes, we look to the same class in France, what a difference do we find? Humble cafes in country towns have their walls covered with pleasing picture papers, representing Esclairs de l'Armée Francaise, the Essens, the R quarters of the world, Cupid, and Psyche, or some other allegory, landscape or history, rudely painted, as papers for walls usually are. But the figures are all tolerably well drawn, and the common taste, which has caused a demand for such things, is undeniable. In Paris, the manner in which the cafes and houses of the restaurateurs are ornamented is, of course, a thousand times richer, and nothing can be more beautiful or more exquisitely finished and correct than the designs which adorn many of them. We are not prepared to say what sums were expended upon the painting of Uri's or Ephors, of the Al-Musard, or of numberless other places of public resort in the capital. There is many a shopkeeper whose sign is a very tolerable picture, and often have we stopped to admire. The reader will give us credit for having remained outside the excellent workmanship of the grapes and vine leaves over the door of some very humble, dirty, inodorous shop of a marchand of inn. These, however, serve only to educate the public taste, and are ornaments for the most part much too costly for the people. But the same love of ornament which is shown in their public places of resort appears in their houses likewise, and every one of our readers who has lived in Paris, in any lodging, magnificent or humble, with any family, however poor, may bear witness how profusely the walls of his smart salon in the English Quarter, or of his little room Osixium in the Pays Latin, has been decorated with prints of all kinds. In the first, probably, with bad engravings on copper from the bad and tawdry pictures of the artists of the time of the Empire, in the latter, with gay caricatures of Granville or Monnier. Military pieces, such as are dashed off by Raffet, Charlotte, Vernet, one can hardly say which of the three designers has the greatest merit, or the most vigorous hand, or clever pictures from the crayon of the Deverias, the admirable Roquiplin, or de Camp. We have named here, we believe, the principal lithographic artists in Paris, and those as doubtless there are many of our readers who have looked over Monsieur Robert's portfolios, or gazed at that famous caricature shop window in the Rue de Coq, or are even acquainted with the exterior of Monsieur Delaporte's little emporium in the Burlington Arcade, need not be told how excellent the productions of all these artists are in their genre. We get in these engravings the loisers of men of genius, not the finicking performances of labored mediocrity, as with us. All these artists are good painters, as well as good designers. A design from them is worth a whole gross of books of beauty, and if we might raise a humble supplication to the artists in our own country of similar merit to such men as Leslie, Maclise, Herbert, Cattermole, and others, it would be that they should, after the example of their French brethren and of the English landscape painters, take chalk in hand, produce their own copies of their own sketches, and never more draw a single Corsican one, rejected one, dejected one at the entreaty of any publisher, or for the pages of any book of beauty, royalty, or loveliness whatever. Can there be a more pleasing walk in the whole world than a stroll through the gallery of the Louvre on a fete day, not to look so much at the pictures as at the lookers-on? Thousands of the poorer classes are there. Mechanics in their Sunday clothes, smiling grisettes, smart dapper soldiers of the line, with bronzed wondering faces, marching together in little companies of six or seven, and stopping every now and then at Napoleon or Leonidas as they appear in proper vulgar heroics in the pictures of David or Gros. The taste of these people will hardly be approved by the connoisseur, but they have a taste for art. Can the same be said of our lower classes, who, if they are inclined to be sociable and amused in their holidays, have no place of resort but the tap room or tea garden, and no food for conversation except such as can be built upon the politics or the police reports of the last Sunday paper? So much has church and state Puritanism done for us, so well has it succeeded in materializing and binding down to the earth the imagination of men, for which God has made another world which certain statesmen take but too little into account, that fair and beautiful world of art, in which there can be nothing selfish or sordid, of which dullness has forgotten the existence, and which bigotry has endeavored to shut out from sight, and a man I less demons a less fees, Laracen or Tristman sacredite. On court, Helas, Appers la verite. Ah, Croyes moi, lerere sun merite. We are not putting in a plea here for demons and fairies, as Voltaire does in the above exquisite lines, nor about to expatiate on the beauties of error, for it has none, but the clank of steam engines, and the shouts of politicians, and the struggle for gain or bread, and the loud denunciations of stupid bigots, have well nigh smothered poor fancy among us. We boast of our science, and vaunt our superior morality. Does the latter exist? In spite of all the forms which our policy has invented to secure it, in spite of all the preachers, all the meeting houses, and all the legislative enactments, if any person will take upon himself the painful labor of purchasing and perusing some of the cheap periodical prints which form the people's library of amusement, and contain what may be presumed to be their standard in matters of imagination and fancy, he will see how false the claim is that we bring forward of superior morality. The aristocracy who are so eager to maintain were, of course, not the last to feel annoyance of the legislative restrictions on the Sabbath, and eagerly seized upon that happy invention for dissipating the gloom, and on we ordered by Act of Parliament to prevail on that day the Sunday paper. It might be read in a club room, where the poor could not see how their betters ordained one thing for the vulgar, and another for themselves, or in an easy chair, in the study, whither my lord retires every Sunday for his devotions. It dealt in private scandal and ribaldry, only the more piquant for its pretty flimsy veil of double entendre. It was a fortune to the publisher, and it became a necessary to the reader, which he could not do without, any more than without his snuff box, his opera box, or his chass after coffee. The delightful novelty could not for any time be kept exclusively for the hot tun, and from my lord it descended to his valet or tradesman, and from Grosvenor Square it spread all the town through, so that now the lower classes have their scandal and ribaldry organs, as well as their betters, the rogues, they will imitate them. And as their tastes are somewhat coarser than my lord's, and their numbers 1,000 to 1, why of course the prints have increased, and the profligacy has been diffused in a ratio exactly proportionable to the demand, until the town is infested with such a number of monstrous publications of the kind as would have put Abbe Dubois to the blush, or made Louis XV cry shame. Talk of English morality! The worst licentiousness, in the worst period of the French monarchy, scarcely equaled the wickedness of this Sabbath-keeping country of ours. The reader will be glad, at last, to come to the conclusion that we would fain draw from all these descriptions. Why does this immorality exist? Because the people must be amused, and have not been taught how. Because the upper classes, frightened by stupid cant, or absorbed in material wants, have not as yet learned the refinement which only the cultivation of art can give, and when their intellects are uneducated, and their tastes are coarse, the tastes and amusements of classes still more ignorant must be coarse and vicious likewise, in an increased proportion. Such discussions and violent attacks upon high and low, Sabbath bills, politicians, and what not, may appear, perhaps, out of place in a few pages which purport only to give an account of some French drawings. All we would urge is that, in France, these prints are made because they are liked and appreciated. With us they are not made, because they are not liked and appreciated. And the more the pity. Nothing merely intellectual will be popular among us. We do not love beauty for beauty's sake, as Germans, or wit for wit's sake, as the French. For abstract art we have no appreciation. We admire HBS caricatures, because they are the caricatures of well-known political characters, not because they are witty, and Boz, because he writes us good palpable stories, if we may use such a word to a story, and Madame Vestris, because she has the most beautifully shaped legs. The art of the designer, the writer, the actress, each admirable in its way, is a very minor consideration. Each might have 10 times the wit, and would be quite unsuccessful without their substantial points of popularity. In France such matters are far better managed, and the love of art is 1,000 times more keen. And, from this feeling, surely, how much superiority is there in French society over our own? How much better is social happiness understood? How much more manly equality is there between Frenchmen and Frenchmen, than between rich and poor in our own country, with all our superior wealth, instruction, and political freedom? There is, amongst the humblest, a gaiety, cheerfulness, politeness, and sobriety, to which, in England, no class can show a parallel. And these, be it remembered, are not only qualities for holidays, but for working days too, and add to the enjoyment of human life as much as good clothes, good beef, or good wages. If, to our freedom, we could but add a little of their happiness, it is one, after all, of the cheapest commodities in the world, and in the power of every man with means of gaining decent bread, who has the will, or the skill to use it. We are not going to trace the history of the rise and progress of art in France. Our business, at present, is only to speak of one branch of art in that country, lithographic designs, and those chiefly of a humorous character. A history of French caricature was published in Paris 2 or 3 years back, illustrated by numerous copies of designs from the time of Henry III to our own day. We can only speak of this work from memory, having been unable, in London, to procure the sight of a copy, but our impression, at the time we saw the collection, was as unfavorable as could possibly be. Nothing could be more meager than the wit, or poorer than the execution, of the whole set of drawings. Under the Empire, art, as may be imagined, was at a very low ebb. And, aping the government of the day, and catering to the national taste and vanity, it was a kind of tawdry caricature of the sublime, of which the pictures of David and Girardet, and almost the entire collection now at the Luxembourg Palace, will give pretty fair examples. Swollen, distorted, unnatural, the painting was something like the politics of those days, with force in it, nevertheless, and something of grandeur, that will exist in spite of taste, and is born of energetic will. A man, disposed to write comparisons of characters, might, for instance, find some striking analogies between Mountbank Murat, with his irresistible bravery and horsemanship, who was a kind of mixture of Du Guesclin and Ducrot, and Mountbank David, a fierce, powerful painter and genius, whose idea of beauty and sublimity seemed to have been gained from the bloody melodramas on the boulevard. Both, however, were great in their way, and were worshipped as gods, in those heathen times of false belief and hero worship. As for poor caricature and freedom of the press, they, like the rightful princess in a fairy tale, with the merry fantastic dwarf, her attendant, were entirely in the power of the giant who ruled the land. The prince's press was so closely watched, and guarded with some little show, nevertheless, of respect for her rank, that she dared not utter a word of her own thoughts. And, for poor caricature, he was gagged, and put out of the way altogether. Imprisoned as completely as ever Asmodeus was in his file. How the press and her attendant fared in succeeding reigns, is well known. Their condition was little bettered by the downfall of Napoleon. With the accession of Charles X, they were more oppressed even than before, more than they could bear, For so hard were they pressed, that, as one the scene, when sailors are working a capstan, back of a sudden the bars flew, knocking to the earth the men who were endeavoring to work them. The revolution came, and up sprung caricature in France. All sorts of fierce epigrams were discharged at the flying monarch, and speedily were prepared to, for the new one. About this time there lived at Paris, if our information be correct, a certain M. Philippin, an indifferent artist, painting was Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.